Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing pretty good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing great. So tonight we're talking about an incident that went down in Bethesda, Maryland. What was the date on that?
2011.
And it was a yoga store where 2 women are apparently attacked. One dies from her injuries and the other one remains alive. Is that where we start?
The store was due to be opened. So worker gets to the store, goes to open the store, but finds that it had possibly been broken into.
And this is a Lululemon yoga store that is right next to an Apple store also.
Right. And there's a reason why it's next to the Apple store. It's in a very nice part of town. Lululemon Athletica is considered a luxury retailer. It's akin to having a Coach or Tiffany nearby. It's a store like that. But they specialize in yoga clothing and
meditation and good vibes all around. So the store owner is opening the store. She realizes that it's been ransacked and she thinks that there could be somebody inside still. So she grabs a pedestrian, a good Samaritan that happens to be standing around.
This guy, and I believe his name is Ryan, was waiting in line to get an iPad 2.
From the Apple store.
From the Apple store. This is around the time of the launch. So it's like within the first day or two. And he was expecting to go in and get an iPad. Well, now he's got someone from next door saying, "Can you please go in? I'm nervous. I think something's happened to the store." So he goes in. And he ends up finding one worker dead. I think he pushes on her a little bit with maybe the tip of his foot.
He actually has to push through a door that's been kind of barricaded. And it's like, I don't know if it's the break room or a closet, but he actually has to open up a door. And he's kind of following a trail of blood. And then he finds the body on the ground. And he gets freaked out. And he starts to run away, actually, but he hears moaning. He hears another person.
Right, and so there's a survivor at the scene. So of course, that's when authorities are called. They go in, and one of the women is definitely deceased, and the other one is alive. So they free her because she's been bound with zip ties on her wrists.
Yeah, she's laying on the ground. Her hands are tied above her head. And her legs are tied. She's bleeding from her forehead, all over her face. And if you've ever had a cut on your head, it bleeds a lot. Cut marks all over her. She looks like she's pretty messed up.
Right. And this is a Saturday. It's March 12th.
The one deceased woman, who is she?
She's Jana Murray. She was 30 years old. She had worked at the store for quite a while. And then the survivor is Brittany Norwood, and she's 28. And this is actually the second Lululemon Athletica store that she's worked at.
The police officers take Brittany to the hospital, actually question her a little bit at the hospital.
They understand that she's probably been through a lot, but they also know that since it's a very recent attack, that the best time to get information is now. So if she's willing, they certainly would like to get a statement down so that they can start trying to crack the case. She describes a horrific tale.
Yeah, she says that her and her coworker had closed the store and actually were walking to their cars, and Brittany had forgot her wallet, and Jana had forgot another item like a laptop.
She wants to get a hold of Jana, but she doesn't have Jana's information because she's kind of new there. So she contacts another coworker who she does have information for and asks her, "Hey, I need Jana's number. I forgot my wallet." And that coworker, she says, "Well, Rachel's right across the street, and Rachel's the store manager. I can just have her come over and let you into the store, and you can get your wallet." And Brittany says, "No, don't bother her, because Jana's out here. She's heading towards her car. I could just contact her, and then she could just come back instead of making Rachel, because she lives across the street.
Yeah.
Instead of making her get ready and come out, because it's late."
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, they left the store at 9:45 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so she says, "Oh, fine." So she gives her Jana's information. She places a call to Jana. And Jana says, "Hey, what's going on?" And she goes, "Well, I forgot my wallet." And Jana says, "You know what? I think I left my laptop in there. So I'll just come back. We'll go in and we'll get our stuff."
Okay.
So she meets her there. And now the reason Jana can get her in is because Jana has that capability.
She's Brittany got the not, store. She's got the, she's the key holder.
Correct. Brittany cannot just go in and out of the store like that once it's locked. So she needs someone to let her in. And she says they go in to get their stuff. Now, on the way out, she says that the men were hiding behind some clothing racks.
These two men dressed in black that entered the store while they were retrieving their items.
Right.
The police pulled security footage, camera footage, from the back alleyway and actually see two men dressed in black walking by at about the same time that the alleged attack happened.
And she'll say that she didn't know anything about them because they were wearing all black. She couldn't tell anything. But she would guess that they were Caucasian based on the way they sounded.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that they were both attacked and that she tried to help Jana, but she wasn't able to. And that they were both raped. And she even says that the man used a hanger on her.
Certain items. I know they had multiple weapons, hammers, and like a wooden peg thing.
Something happens where they insert something to assault her with, too. She even says that she was pushed down on top of Jana. It's really amazing how much information she gave, because she didn't seem to really want to talk for long, because obviously she must have been through a lot. So, but they have enough information to start to go to work on the case.
Mm-hmm. And they're looking for these two men on the security camera footage.
Which they find them.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't say there's just two men. She actually describes them as being there's a taller one and one that's shorter, about 5'5", I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a disparity in height there. So two men all dressed in black should stand out. And I believe she also says one of them had a backpack.
Yeah.
So they pull up the footage from the Apple store, has a camera outside. And lo and behold, right around that time, two men with disparity in their height go walking by, one wearing a backpack. I believe it was the taller one wearing the backpack.
Yeah.
So that sets off an investigation. Who are these people? Amazingly, I don't know how they do it, but they figure out who those people are.
Yeah.
They first think that it's this man named Keith. Keith is a homeless man, but it's said that he does get involved in some drug dealing and things like that, you know, to make money. that night he had shown up at a hospital bloody. You'd think that's a red flag right there.
Yeah.
Right? He fits the description. He hangs out with a man who's about 5'5".
And he shows up bloody.
At the hospital. And he says that he had been hit by a guy.
And meanwhile, you got security camera footage right there of these two men.
Well, trouble is, Keith's story checks out.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up not being a very good suspect. They can cross Keith off the list. And furthermore, two men seeing in the footage, they can place them as being as working in the restaurant next door.
Yeah, they were like dishwashers or something, but they were wearing their restaurant uniforms, which happened to be black.
That's right.
You know, P.F. Chang's or whatever. You know, they always make them wear like black aprons and black everything.
Yeah, so these guys check out. They have multiple witnesses. They were working and they were leaving. And they just happened to go past the yoga store at this particular moment. What a coincidence.
During their interview with Brittany, they're asking her if she knows anything about the victim's car. And she says she's seen it once. She didn't really recollect what kind of car it was or a lot of detail about it. So the police were just like, okay, well, you know, we were just wondering. During the investigation, the police find a lot of evidence at the scene. They find bloody footprints. They find multiple devices or weapons used in the attack. They find that Brittany had fairly superficial wounds.
Right. That sort of bugged them early on, but the shoe prints were a big deal early on because they found that there were prints that belonged to Brittany, and then there were prints that belonged to a pair of Reeboks. Well, they ended up finding a pair of Reeboks in the store that were size 14.
Yeah.
And asked Brittany about the shoes. And she said, oh yeah, the store has a pair of men's shoes. And she said it's for...
like display shoes or demo shoes.
She said they're used for alterations.
Okay, yeah.
So when they're trying the clothing on, they know where the fitting and...
where the pant leg's going to fall.
Right. And I imagine they're size 14, which is actually the size I wear. Mm-hmm. But I imagine they're size 14 because most people will come in under that.
Yeah.
So they'll fit everybody, really, just for that purpose. What they didn't understand was, why are they there and why was there a little bit of blood on them?
Yeah, why would the attackers come in and either put on this pair of shoes that was at the store, walk around with them, and then take them back off?
And clean them.
That just doesn't make a lot of sense.
They were stored out of sight.
Yeah.
You wonder, why would they even know of their existence?
They also are questioning why every single weapon used in the attack was from inside the store. Now, I know some criminals will just break in and grab whatever's available to them. I know that's a possibility, but it's just looking a little suspect at this point.
Yeah, the other thing about the shoe prints is, for one, those shoe prints, they are never seen leaving the store. A lot of the way the prints are left, they say it's inconsistent with normal biomechanical movement.
So not looking like somebody wearing them left the prints.
What I would say is it would be more as though someone wasn't walking very well in them.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
There's a normal stride when you leave prints. This wasn't normal stride.
Yeah.
And some of them, I think they were actually moving to the side, like sidestepping almost. And then there were other marks on the floor that were very odd. And these could not be accounted for until they did further testing on the shoes. And what they did was they got another pair of shoes. And because the laces had been undone on the Reeboks, they got another pair of shoes, laid out a long stretch of white paper, and then got some animal blood on the laces. And then just started walking, and it left the same marks that they saw in the store. So
the laces weren't tied. They were untied and dragging.
They were untied, and they were trying to figure out how it would be possible that these other marks were left on the floor. and why the bloody prints literally would go one way. And then over by the sink, they literally disappear. And then they don't come back away from the sink. So they say it's like someone took them off.
Yeah.
To wash them and then didn't put them back on for the walk back. Why would someone enter the store and put those shoes on? It's very, very suspect. And then again, as
and
we
leave
said,
them there.
And leave them there. And it's very suspect too that she would have such minor injuries. Now, what were her injuries? She had a cut on her forehead and a cut on her hand. And the cut on her hand was such that it could have been as if she was holding a knife and the knife slipped and cut her. That's where the cut was. So they're becoming suspicious, but who's becoming suspicious? Well, it's Dmitry Ruvin. He's the younger detective. The two detectives working the case, he's the younger guy. Mm-hmm. I believe he was born in Russia. He's very suspicious early on, but his partner, who's been a detective for over 30 years, Detective Drury, he's very hesitant.
Why?
Well, I think he's more sensitive to what's going on. Jaina Murray is white and Brittany Norwood is black. So as we know, media loves to stir up trouble and turn everything into a racial issue. And I think he was of the mindset, we're going to need a lot more evidence before I'm ready to go in that direction.
Yeah. And also, if Brittany was a victim in this crime, he's being sensitive to that. Absolutely.
Right, right. So you can't get this wrong. Now, Reuven, he's really feeling this gut instinct telling him she did this. Or at least, I think at this, like early on, he thinks she at least knew the killers and let them in. Because why else would she not be injured very seriously at all? I mean, her life was never in danger as far as they knew when they checked her out at the hospital. And they also checked out because she had said that she'd been raped and assaulted with a wooden hanger. They checked for any kind of injuries, and they didn't find any.
No evidence of a sexual assault.
Nothing. Nothing that would indicate, yeah, anything like that.
On either of the women.
Okay, so they need more evidence. They process the car.
They look at both of their cars, and they find Brittany's car is okay, but they find something interesting with Jaina's car. What do they find with hers?
They find some blood.
Well, first, they find that it's been parked a few blocks away. And then inside of it, they find some blood.
They're confident that they could test items from the car and get DNA from it. But I'll tell you right now, in this case, the lab that would be doing the DNA work was pretty overloaded. So they had to be very careful. I know people have this idea that you can just send a lab 1,000 items and they'll just start running them through and testing them all. But it's not that easy. This isn't the only case they're working on. So they really have to be careful and send them a limited number of items to test. Here's our best bet. We're going to test these things and run with those and see what we get.
And this has become a high profile case. It's in a very well-to-do area. People are scared now because they assume there's two assailants on the loose and they have to get this right.
So yeah, sales of self-defense tools have gone up.
Yeah.
You know, pepper spray and other items have gone up. People are nervous. You know, would these men strike again? Meanwhile, Brittany has to tell her family that there are two men loose and that they saw her information, her address.
They know where she lives.
Yeah, they went through her wallet or whatever, and they know where she lives. And she had to tell her family that it's a possibility that they could come back for her because she survived.
The police officers, the detectives, they find this blood in Jaina's car, and they know the blood came from Brittany. Now, how does that blood get in the car? Well, they ask Brittany during that first interview, do you know what kind of car Jaina drives? She says, no, I've only seen it once. So there's no explanation in the initial interview of why there's blood in Jaina's car. It's sort of a sticking point with me.
We should say that the detectives were impressed with Brittany's family. Like, this is just a very close-knit, respectable family. Not the kind of family you would expect to have any problem. You know, they're just good people. They interviewed her brother and they wanted to know any kind of information he could give on Brittany. They need more information. They're processing items of interest, looking for DNA, looking for other evidence, because who knows, she could have known the attackers that came in. They're just trying to work every angle. So the brother, Chris, he tells them a strange story. He is confused as to why she was spared. He doesn't know why, because he knows that the other woman was just brutally murdered. And we'll get into what happened to her in a bit. But he talked about when she was young, their father was driving her to a soccer game and they ran out of gas. Well, he told her to remain with the car and he would go get gas and he would be back, but just to stay in the car, don't go anywhere. Well, he went and got gas and he came back and she was gone.
Brittany had left the car.
Yeah, she left the car. Now, she left it of her own accord. She hitchhiked back home. So it's a weird story, and it's odd that her brother Chris volunteered that.
Again, it doesn't mean much, but it shows that Brittany is a little impulsive, maybe.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Right. Meanwhile, Brittany is very, very, I guess you could say, anxious. She contacts them via her brother, Chris.
She calls the police.
Well, Chris calls them.
And she says she has more information.
Yeah, she says that she has information that she hadn't revealed up to this point to them. So they say, well, she should come in immediately. And they say, no, well, it'll be the next morning. We'll bring her in the next morning. And I believe it's at like 10 a.m. that they show up.
So she comes back to the police station on her own accord to speak to the crime and give more information about it.
Yeah, it's very like, I have this one other thing I need to tell you.
Columbo, one more thing.
And she believes that she can tell him this one more thing and then just go. But of course, it's not that easy because the information she has is pretty important.
So what does she tell them?
She says that at some point the intruders demanded she put a cap on her head or something like that and move Jaina's car.
It's an odd request.
They say to move the car, and of course it's blocks away that it needs to be moved to, but that after that she needs to come right back or they'll kill her.
And they know where she lives because they have her ID.
Well, she doesn't really bring that up as far as I know in this interview. She just says that she fears for her life if she doesn't do as they ask, because they've already killed Jaina. But she also admits that she saw a police officer while she was in the car, where she parked it.
So she's now left the scene where she was being raped and held captive to go move her coworker's car, and she doesn't flee, and she actually sees a police officer while she's doing this errand for the two intruders, and she returns back to the yoga store. Just want to make that clear. Okay.
Right. Very odd statement. Of course, the detectives at this point are thinking, whoa, this just, of all the unlikely things that we've heard so far, this has gotten ridiculous. So, of course, they need to go and talk with their
captain,
with the brass, yeah. You know, and they need to talk with them and figure out a strategy here, because now they're really just like,
the story's unbelievable.
We can't let her out. I mean, if we let her go now, she may flee. She's at this point, she has told them that she may move to get out of the area just because of all the stress. But that, you know, her family has offered to fly her back whenever they need her, because she understands that she's a witness to this crime.
But at the same time, in her first interview, she said she didn't know what kind of car her coworker drove. And then in the second interview, she's saying, I got in her car and moved it and came back to the scene of the crime. She gives no explanation about the shoes, the bloody footprints. Her story's not really making sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
I don't mind her saying, I don't know what kind of car it is.
But she was basically saying that she hadn't been in the car, and now she's saying she had been in the car.
Exactly.
Right. That's what the detectives are cluing in on.
Yeah.
So they say that's all fine and good, but we need details.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where she's starting to get a little upset. She doesn't like having to come up with these details, because they're asking her, okay, so what exactly happened? How did this come up that you had to go move this car? And she says, do you have her keys? And she said, no, I don't. So she had to root around and find Jaina's keys. So she had to go through and start explaining things in more detail. The detectives at this point are starting to feel really confident that she's just going to keep tripping over herself. That there's no way she was prepared. The way they looked at this was, it had spooked her. The car thing had spooked her. She must have understood that the reason why they had asked earlier about the car is because she must have left evidence in there. And so she had to come up with a story. That's what they're thinking.
Yeah.
But now the question is, because she is starting to get upset and she is starting to say, I want to go. I want to leave. And they're not responding to that. One of the things they do is they'll say, give us a minute. We'll be right back. And they would leave and go talk with the brass again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would come back and kind of throw a new question at her. They can only do that so many times before they have to make a move.
Well, I mean, this is like when you buy a car and the salesman goes off to talk to management. You can get up and leave whenever you want. Just most people, out of politeness, don't. But she's not being told she's detained or under arrest or anything during this whole second interview. She's just told, hold on a minute, while she waits.
Well, that will change, and they'll end up cuffing her to the table.
Yeah.
And they do read her rights, because they feel like she could be a flight risk. They think they could get her back, but they just really feel like they need to move on this now.
Now they engage the arrest and read her her rights.
They read her rights, and that way they can keep her for a while. They start to tell her what they have. They start to tell her how they feel like she's not been honest with them, that they have a good idea of what happened, and they try to appeal to her. We don't know what happened. Perhaps you two got in a fight. Perhaps it got out of control. And they brought up her family, how great her family seemed. But she would only clam up. She wouldn't admit to anything. And they went through the evidence. They said, you're barely scratched, and here the other woman is completely annihilated. She just has nothing much to say. Now, her family is there, and they decide to bring her brother and sister in, Chris and Marissa, because she's asking for them. She's feeling pressure, and she's feeling scared at this point. So she asks for her family.
So they're happy to do that, and they start telling them the evidence. So you start to wonder, was that really a good thing for Brittany to ask them to be brought in? Well, now they get to throw all this stuff at Chris and Marissa, and Marissa starts to get really upset, and Chris is like, please just take her out of here. They start talking with Chris after Marissa is removed. I don't know. I got the feeling from his statements and reactions that he was starting to have some doubts about his sister's story, but he said, she's my sister.
Yeah. Family.
She's my family. I can't just abandon her. And so he asks for time alone with his sister.
So they leave Chris and Brittany in the interrogation room together.
Chris lets her know because she's worried about the room being bugged. And he says, no, I've looked around. I don't see anything. There's no device in here to record us. He says, I need to know. And she said, I'm going to ruin our whole family. And he says, no, you're not. No, you're not. You need to talk. You need to tell me. I need to know. I can't help you if I don't know anything. He asks about her and her coworker, and she says, I don't know how this happened. So he's saying, so you did it. Now, of course, the detectives, they're watching all of this.
Because there's cameras and recordings.
And I'm sure they're snapping their fingers and clapping their hands and going, yep, okay, well, now we've got them. We know she's essentially, now here's the tricky part. She's essentially saying she did it without coming out and saying she did it.
She didn't confess, but she didn't say I absolutely
did it. There's no denial, right? Yeah. There's no denial, and she's worried about the impact of what this could mean for her family. He asks her about, did you steal something? Here's what, and I've been saving this till now because this is a chilling point. All this evidence, there's a motive possibly. What's the motive, right? Brittany has a history of stealing things.
She's like a klepto. Like, it's not just a history. It's a long...
It's a pattern.
Pattern.
And this is where someone at the other store she worked at took a perfume bottle out of her bag. It was a Vera Wang perfume and used it on herself and Brittany. And they both loved it, of course. And she put it back in her bag. She hung the bag up and then went to change. But she came back out, took her bag, and left. 2 days later, she discovers that the Vera Wang was not in her bag. Now, she had never taken it out.
Yeah.
But this is a pattern. There are so many interviews where people said, yeah, I just had this money missing, that money missing.
It goes all the way back to high school where classmates and teammates of her, I think she was like on a softball team or something, said, make sure your locker's locked because Brittany will go through your stuff and take things.
Yeah, she was a soccer player, very good soccer player.
Soccer player.
So, and this is actually why she had to move to this other store. Let's go over something really interesting. There's a special night once a year. Since Lululemon Athletica is a luxury store, employees, they don't make a ton of money.
No.
They make $11 an hour. Health insurance is provided. They get fitness club. They get yoga classes provided for. And they get really good discounts on merchandise. But once a year, they have something called Shop Night. And at the end of the year, they get a discount night where they can get a, I think it's like 70% off. It's special, some ridiculous amount.
It's like wholesale cost almost.
But there's a cap. So they can buy $1,000 worth of retail merchandise at 70% off, which would be... It's a little over $300 worth that they're capped at to spend with their discount.
Yeah.
Well, she had asked for her cap to be loosened because she wanted to spend a little bit more. The manager said, okay, sure. Well, she purchased well over $2,000 worth. Oh, it was almost $2,200, I think. And it cost her $660. This is what gets everybody in trouble, is the manager was uncomfortable with the whole stealing thing because at the store, money was going missing. And it only happened on nights that she worked. Mm-hmm. So you add in this final straw that broke the camel's back of her going well over the spending limit, and they decided to fire her for discount abuse.
But instead she transfers?
An internal investigation happens because she's not the only one who breaks the rules.
Ah.
Okay? The store, it... You could say they have a philosophy. And I think the way they started to look at this was, this isn't enough to fire people for. We just need to tighten our rules and we'll let people know about this, and then we'll reinstate these people. So she contacted Brittany, but see, Brittany wasn't doing very well at the store because so many people were suspicious of her. So she decides, I'll move to the Lululemon store in Bethesda. But the manager there has heard about her. So
and they're doing bag checks every night.
Yeah, they have to. She's heard about her. Her reputation preceded her. But she had no choice because the company said, you need to take her. But they do bag checks. And there's a suspicion after a while that they think that she's been shoplifting from the store. Here we go in the night of question. Jaina has been asked to check her bag.
And Jaina finds items in her bag.
She finds a pair of yoga pants. And she says, oh, do you have a receipt for this? Well, Brittany rightly says, well, I don't have a receipt. I mean, employees would usually not keep receipts because they couldn't return them anyway. There were no returns on the items because they worked there. They should know whether they're going to work out or not. So she's covered on that point. But she says, who did you buy these from? And she gives the name of another employee, which is frankly hard to pronounce. So Jaina says, okay, well, we'll look into it later.
Jaina makes a phone call.
Right. After Jaina leaves, she calls this other employee. She has her number. And she says, hey, did you sell a pair of yoga pants to Brittany Norwood? And she says, no, I didn't. She goes, okay. And she lets her know, hey, I was supposed to check for any stolen items, and I think we've nailed her.
Yeah.
There we go. Now Brittany gets a hold of her later, shortly thereafter, and says, I forgot my wallet.
And maybe Jaina confronts her about the pants.
Yeah, that's a good question about how this goes down, because I had the feeling that Brittany knew that she would be reported.
Because she now Brittany knows, oh, Jaina found the pants and da-da-da-da-da.
Both these women are in transition, because what you should know about Jaina was she was very, very close to getting her 2 degrees.
She was always involved in non-for-profits. Like, Jaina was really just a community leader kind of person.
Yeah, she was pursuing master's degrees in business administration with an emphasis in marketing and then a degree in communication. She was just 2 months away. But she was planning to move after she got those degrees to be near her boyfriend. I don't know if it was public or private, but he had let her know that he wanted to marry her. So she was planning big changes in her life. New career, husband, and a new area, which was Seattle. Now, Norwood was in transition too, because she was pretty much burning bridges at this Lululemon Athletica store.
Yeah.
She was hoping to get a fitness instructor position at another place nearby. Well, I imagine that when she understands that this woman, this coworker, is going to turn her in, she's probably not very happy. Because if she gets fired for stolen merchandise, what are the chances she's actually going to start working that new job in a few days?
So now we're kind of wondering if Brittany actually planned this by getting Jaina to come back to the store to let her back in. Because she knows.
Right. What's going to work better here? We're going to move ahead here a little bit, but what will work better? If she is responsible for this, would she really just attack her in the store before they close down? That wouldn't work. There might be people coming in. Now, after closing, could they do it? Well, the store's locked. But if they leave and then they have to come back in,
it's a question.
Then they can say, well, the door wasn't locked behind me.
Mm-hmm. And people shouldn't be coming in because it's closed.
Let's talk about the trial. She's charged in the death of her coworker. She gets a top-notch defense attorney. His last name's Wood. And he has to decide how he's going to approach this case. So he's looking everything over, and he gets a sense early on that there's no way he's going to be able to beat the evidence. So he has the unfortunate task of letting them know, hey, we're going to be taking probably a course you're not fond of, but we're going to have to own up to a violent encounter between these two women. And one of the first things he does is contacts a doctor who specializes in head injuries, head trauma, get some things in the works to figure out how to sort of take the responsibility off of her so that she can either serve a short sentence or be eligible for parole. So his job, as he sees it, is to minimize the effect of this trial on the rest of her life.
Protect her as much as he can.
Right. And John McCarthy is the prosecutor. And the way he sees it is, we've got her nailed six ways from Sunday. And he feels very confident. But he also understands the way the defense is probably going to go after this case as well. So they really need to dot their I's and cross their T's and make sure that they can prove to a jury that Brittany is responsible for the death of Jana Murray. So the medical examiner, Dr. Mary Ripple, she documented the injuries to Jana, and they're horrific. But we kind of have to go over them, because for anyone that thinks, oh, maybe they just got into a bad argument and she accidentally killed her, that's not what happened. I mean, we can just say that.
Yeah.
Jana suffered at least 331 pummeling, cutting, and stabbing injuries, and 152 of those were just to her head. 108 injuries or so were to her hands and arms, and those look like defensive injuries, as though she was holding up her hands and arms trying to deflect blows and cuts and everything else. And they say that if you take the total number of injuries to her, and if she was being struck once per second, the attack would have lasted about 5.5 minutes. So that would be no break. Here's the tricky part. Between 5 and 8 weapons were used. So they believe that if you calculate it at an attack every 3 seconds, it would have lasted at least 17 minutes.
And she would have lived through most of this attack.
Right. She would have been aware of this attack for most of it. The weapons, as they were able to find, were a wrench, a hammer, a screwdriver. There was a Buddha statue that may have been involved. There was rope. There were box cutters there. And then she had injuries that they couldn't discern where they came from. L-shaped injuries and other odd injuries that were from a heavy instrument, but they just couldn't tell what had made them. So they brought an expert back with them to look over the scene, and they ended up finding something called a merchandise peg. And it's a metal bar that has sort of a flat part. It fits onto the wall, and then you can hang merchandise from it.
Mm-hmm.
The final injury, as far as they can tell, was she was stabbed in the base of her skull with a knife.
And that punctured her brain and killed her.
It's a brutal attack. It lasted for a while. Now, they also have witnesses. And here's something that left me really uneasy and had lasting effects on the store as well. The people who worked at the Apple store,
they were preparing for the big sale, the big reveal of their iPad 2. So they were there late that night.
And they had security. They heard shouting. They heard talking. They heard pleading. They heard crashing items. They heard things next door. And nobody felt the need to report it.
More detail to that, they only heard women, female voices.
That's right.
No male voices.
And they were even able to say that one of them said, "Why are you doing this?" And, "Oh God, please no."
Please
things
listen,
like that.
Please listen to me. Please stop.
Please stop. So they heard the pleading, and even one of the security guards was like, "I've heard this stuff before. I grew up in a bad part of town." And
nobody responds. Nobody does the right thing. You know, I've seen the social experiment shows where, you know, a homeless guy will behave like he's dying on the sidewalk, and 100 people will step over him, and nobody will call an ambulance or do anything.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you.
Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
So McCarthy, the prosecutor, describes how the attack likely went down. He talks about the push bar on the back door. Now, the back door has an alarm on it. So if you push through, it sets off a back alarm.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure people have heard this before. There was blood on that push bar, and they believe that Jaina almost made it and almost set off that alarm. Almost. But she was dragged back into the store. The zip ties, because Brittany had been zip tied, they were able to show that she used her mouth to pull the zip tie closed, and that the zip ties were stored in an area of the store that they didn't think that the intruders would have known about, because there was a box of them, but they didn't think that they would have been obvious.
And her hands were above her head in front of her, not zip tied behind her.
Yeah, they said she could have easily just crawled to a phone if she had wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she just laid there. So the defense attorney wanted to counter what was going on, and he had to object probably 100 times, I'm sure, because McCarthy would try to drop anything he could, even stuff that, you know, a judge would say, objection sustained.
Yeah.
He would try everything. He was putting everything out there. And Wood was saying that there were some things here that actually are in Brittany's favor. He said that the vicious attack revealed that she had to have been out of her mind, because this isn't normal, and that she's got no history. She has no history of any psychological issues. So it just didn't make sense.
Yeah, I think he said like 5 or 6 times, she lost it.
Right. Yeah, he drives that point home. And then he also talks about when she called to get Jaina's number from a coworker, that she's leaving a trail. And that just didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But now, that actually fits in with Brittany's story of saying that she needed to get a hold of her so she could bring her back to the store.
Showing premeditation.
That's where it can cut either way, depending on your perception of this. And so if you're a Norwood family member, I'm sure you're thinking it wasn't premeditated. Like she said, that Jaina was already outside and that she could be called back.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said that the fake robbery and the really ridiculous attempts to stage the scene were obvious, that she wasn't capable of planning it well. So she, again, was, this isn't premeditated. She hadn't planned it out very well, and she had lost it.
But literally, if she hadn't of done the bloody shoe prints and left the blood in Jaina's car, she probably could have gotten away with it.
Yeah, I think the moving of the car is the one thing that really got to the prosecutors, because if you were in a moving car and you were blocks away, you could have kept driving.
Yeah.
Sure, they know where you are, but now you can go to the police.
Yeah. Now, the defense did have one win. The phone call from Jaina to the coworker describing the stolen items in Brittany's bag. They weren't allowed to bring that into trial, that phone call, because they said it was hearsay, and they weren't allowed to bring in the witness, the coworker, who talked to Jaina about the report of the stolen property. One win on the defense side.
Right. So they got it there, but the co-prosecutor, Ayers, Mary Beth Ayers, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, but she would let the jury know that the reason why the car was moved, because Brittany doesn't have a good explanation why the intruders would want it moved, but Mary Beth Ayers says, well, the boss lived across the street. If she looked out and saw Jaina's car out there at 11, 12, 1 in the morning, you can bet she'd be very worried.
She might come investigate.
She would come investigate. And if she gets there too soon, well, maybe the story's blown. So have to move the car so that there's some time before she's discovered. The jury takes an hour.
It was less than an hour.
All right, about an hour. But it's funny, the person that sort of led the jury that was having them, asking them, you know, let's just take an initial vote. Who thinks that she's guilty of first-degree murder? Everybody raised their hand. So then he says, well, to play devil's advocate, let's go through and try to come up with some things to see if we can lessen the charge. See
to second degree or something else.
And they start to talk over some things, and then they start looking at each other like, this is preposterous. Like, they really don't, they just see nothing in her favor.
It appears that she premeditated the attack. And even if she called her coworker back to let her into the store to get her wallet or her purse, and it was a freak attack, I don't think the attack took 17 minutes. I think the attack took a lot longer, and at any point she could have stopped. Not even 17 minutes of torture and brutality. It could have been up to an hour or two of brutality here. And then to turn around and cover the scene, conceal evidence, even if you don't think the attack was premeditated, everything else was.
Yeah, the prosecutor drives that point home about how going for the different weapons in the room and proceeding to attack more, that she had many opportunities to stop. They talked about how she reveled in the gore, mm-hmm. that she just didn't stop. She kept going. I think they were the opinion that she had ambushed Jaina, that she had struck her in the head.
Yeah.
And then Jaina instinctively grabbed her head there and blood came away, and then she fell towards like a wall, and she actually left a print. They believe that's where the initial attack happened, and then it just got worse from there.
And there was blood on a Buddha statue. Like, how wrong is that? A deity that's supposed to symbolize Zen and love. It's just so, this whole store is supposed to symbolize these love and togetherness.
So we talked about how the trial did not go well for her.
Yeah.
And, you know, Frank, who would expect it to?
But I did see some online supporters for Brittany.
Yeah. Well, everyone's going to have online support, right?
I guess so.
When it comes to the sentencing phase, the prosecutor would have only have normally gotten one person to get up and talk, maybe someone to represent the Murray family. But he asks for, I think, eight or nine people to get up and talk, something like that. He wants her family to be able to have their say. They get up and have their say.
Drum up as much sympathy as they can.
They need it because he really wants the book thrown at Brittany. Jaina's father gets up and he talks about how she wasn't just a daughter. She was one of his four best friends. This guy loved his family. And I think what he's referring to is his wife, his two sons, and Jaina. The mother, completely distraught. She couldn't even throw away a diet soda can that was found in her place because it just reminded her, I guess, of her daughter. Some, you know. Anyway, so the defense has Brittany's family come up and talk, and their goal is to let people know that this Brittany isn't one that they're familiar with, that they don't understand it, but they don't want people to think that this one night defines her and that she could be rehabilitated or that she could become a better person. She just needs to be given the opportunity. And they feel the only opportunity for her is if she has a glimmer of hope. And that glimmer of hope is the possibility of parole at some point. And that if she doesn't have that glimmer of hope, that she'll have despair and that she'll get worse and they'll lose her.
Does somebody that attacks somebody deserve parole? Possibly, but somebody that attacks somebody brutally and tortures them and then attempts to cover up the entire crime, do they deserve parole?
Well, let's hear what Brittany has to say before the judge speaks. And she says, "For the Murray family, what do I say when your daughter's gone and I'm the one convicted of her murder? I know what I say today won't take the pain away over the loss of Jaina." And she said she was deeply sorry. She said, "I hope for the Murray family someday you'll be able to find forgiveness in your heart. I am truly sorry." But of course, the prosecutor and Jaina's family, they're of one mind on this. They believe that she's just trying to get parole.
Yeah.
And that she'll say and do whatever it takes to make that happen. Now, the judge even starts off sounding sympathetic. He said, "I am exceedingly reluctant to grant you even the slightest chance of doing this to another member of the community." And this is Judge Robert A. Greenberg. So at that point, everybody knows she's in trouble. He said, "On several different levels, this case exemplified the worst of human behavior." He actually attacks the people at the Apple Store here. He talks about the callous indifference of the people who worked at the Apple Store, who heard this happening and didn't do a blessed thing.
Mm.
He said, "Most of us can only shake our heads in amazement, wonderment, and disgust." And then here's the part that really chilled me. He started pounding his fist. He was looking at her. He tells her, he said, "While he was considering your sentence, he repeated this action 330 times, and it took him 8 minutes to do that, in an attempt to gauge how long the attack took." And as we said, that's just once per second.
Yeah, that's just doing it constantly.
Or about once a second. Yeah. So he's letting her know he was really taking in how this all went down before he decided on a sentence for her. And he said, "After every blow, you had a chance to think about what you were doing." He was talking about when she was covering up the crime. He said that she was devious, in control, totally on top of the situation. He said, "While you tried to lie to get out of what you had done," he said, "you are one hell of a liar, ma'am." And he said, "Anybody who could commit such a crime stood very little chance of being rehabilitated."
No parole.
Yeah, no parole. I should say that Jaina has a couple of brothers, and one of them was active military, and he was in Iraq when he got the news that he needed to go home. The sad thing is after this all went down, he would go back to Iraq and there would be a package waiting for him from Jaina. And she had written this cute little note about how she said certain things aren't right unless they're together. So she had chips and dip and she had a little cute list of things. And the last one was "you and me." And she told him to stay safe and hope to see him soon. Now, the prosecutor was really happy with the sentencing. He said that Miss Norwood will die in jail. Those were his words. So let's talk about this. I mean, we sort of have an idea of what, if she is an impulsive person, like you said, we could see how maybe she did lose it, but maybe lost her temper, right?
Yeah.
And had to protect this job that she had coming up. But what do you think is at the heart of all this? How a person who'd made it to age 28 before committing such a murder, how this would happen?
I mean, she does have a pattern of theft, but doesn't appear to have a pattern of violent crime. So she got this far. I think that she had a lot of things, you know, the more someone has to lose, the more they're going to fight for it. So I think she was waiting for this new position. She had all these things going for her, and Jaina was going to get in the way of that. Maybe it started out as, "I'm going to scare you
so you don't, you know, report me, and it got away from her? Or maybe it was, I'm planning this whole thing and I'm going to kill you. I mean, I could see that, but I don't think she lost it. I think she planned it either way.
Yeah, I'm not sure. One of the things that I did to prepare for the episode was there's a book by Dan Morse. It's a complete rundown of the story from beginning to end and has a lot of details that you can't readily find online. And his book is The Yoga Store Murder. I get the sense from his book that she'd always been able to talk her way or evade trouble when she stole from other people. In this situation, she knew this was going to have a huge detriment to her life because at the time, and they couldn't bring this up during the trial, but they did during the sentencing hearing during post-conviction, they brought it up. But she had been visiting a lot of sugar daddy websites, and she had a fare card that was provided by a nonprofit group that helped prostitutes. So she was getting money from men, being with them. She was highly in debt. Her life was not in a very good spot. Now, it looked all right from the surface because Brittany was very fit, had a great smile. She came from a great family, and she was about to get another job. All behind the scenes, she wasn't sleeping very much. She was trying to stay active socially. Really, behind the scenes, she was spiraling out of control. And I think it's like anything else. You put people in the right situation, maybe their psychopath side comes out. Because if you look at how much violence was perpetrated upon Jaina Murray, it's clear that this woman let everything out at that point. I mean, this was a very long, long attack. Like you said, I agree with that. And her attempts to cover it up means that she was wanting to move on with her life. She wanted sympathy, and she wanted the new job. She wanted more money, and she felt like this was her chance to move on and move up. But of course, it didn't work out that way. It doesn't matter how nice her family was, how good all of her family was. She's screwed up.
Slight update to this whole case to show you how screwed up she is. She's fighting for a retrial now. She says that she was not read her Miranda rights, and she says that the witnesses during the trial were deemed experts, and she says they're not experts. So she's trying to get a retrial with, I'm assuming, a lesser sentencing, because she decided to go talk to the police and they didn't read her Miranda rights, because at that point she was not under arrest. And she says that the police officers and the investigators were not experts, so therefore they shouldn't have testified at her trial. That's just insane to me.
Yeah, I don't see that working too well, because the defense attorney brought up the fact that she wasn't read her Miranda rights for quite a while to the judge. And the judge shot it down because he said it's her perception. The door was open. She was not cuffed. She could have got up and walked out. She chose to stay.
She chose to show up.
Yeah, she chose to show up. She chose to stay.
She was the one talking to them.
Right. And despite saying a number of times that she wanted to leave, she didn't leave.
No.
I think it happened more than once, but there's a point also where she brings up the fact that she didn't know anything. No one's telling her anything.
Yeah.
So you can tell there's a concern on her part. I think she wanted to stay in there a little bit to get as much information as she could. Now, obviously, that starts to backfire when they start showing her all this evidence eventually that they had on her. Up to that point, she was anxious. She was concerned about what they knew and where they were going with the investigation. This was suggested to us by a listener. And I remember when I first read about this, what stood out to me was how you could have two women who were looking to move out and up. If you just look at them, they seemed like two great women.
Yeah.
And yet they end up in this violent confrontation where one completely destroys the other one. And then, as we suspect in other cases, she tries to stage the scene to make it look like she's a victim. But again, how does one person end up completely butchered and the other one is hardly scratched? Luckily, we had detectives who stuck with it, who were sensitive, took their time, and were able to show pretty completely that she was responsible. So we don't have the mystery for some. This is pretty clear cut. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.